Good afternoon, brothers and friends, brothers, sisters, friends, and comrades. What I'd like to do in the period of time I have is to talk about the parallels between Malcolm X and William James Edwards, the person who I just finished a biography of, you know, who was an Alabama educator in Snow Hill, Alabama, active from the period of 1893 up until 1925. That was the period of his most vigorous activism. But he was born in 1868 in Snow Hill, Alabama, educated at Tuskegee Institute. Immediately after, went back to his rural community in Snow Hill, Alabama, and founded a school modeled after Tuskegee. In researching the life of Edwards, it became very apparent to me that a lot of the kinds of conclusions that we had drawn about significant periods in African American history were no more than cliches. So also in pursuing the research into the life of William James Edwards, I was struck by the similarity of a number of the features between the life of Malcolm X and the life of William James Edwards. We heard, I think, yesterday the very stirring message of James Cone when he was noting the parallels between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. But the parallels, I think, between Edwards and Malcolm are just as striking. Almost striking to the extent that the subtitle of the book is Fallen Prince. The subtitle is William James Edwards, Black Education and the Quest for Afro-American Nationality. And for a moment or two, I was toying with the idea of subtitling it William James Edwards, the Malcolm X of his time. But let me share some of what I thought were these similarities between Malcolm X and William James Edwards. Number one, both men were disciples of great visionary men. Malcolm X being a disciple of Elijah Muhammad, who was certainly, I think, a visionary and certainly a leader of one of the mass movements of black people during the period of the 50s and 60s. Edwards was a disciple of Booker T. Washington, being a student at Tuskegee Institute. He went there in 1889, graduated in 1893, and returned to his rural community to put into practice what I call in the book Fallen Prince, the Tuskegee Program. The Tuskegee Program was the program of advance for the African-American peasantry during that particular period. And Edwards went back to his rural community and began to put into practice this Tuskegee program. One of the central features of the Tuskegee program was the acquisition of land for the Afro-American peasantry. That was one of its central features. And if anyone decides to do research into the question of land acquisition by African Americans, you know, they will confront head on the Tuskegee program, will confront head on the policies of Booker T. Washington, because it was during this general period that black people acquired the enormous amounts of land that you hear us constantly losing at such a rapid rate. You know, no historical study, I mean, if you can believe this, has been done that deals with how all of this land that Afro-Americans had acquired, I mean, how they acquired this land. No study, you know, exists exhaustively or even phenomenally that talks about the acquisition of land by African Americans, and probably it's because to do that confronts the figure of Booker T. Washington. Also, both men, Edwards and Malcolm, had to break with their ideological fathers in order to advance the African American struggle. Certainly, if you've been in attendance at any of the plenary sessions, you have heard about how Malcolm, the break with the Nation of Islam, that Malcolm had to make this break to become more politically involved. If you were around during that period, you know there was that was one of the dictums of the NOI was that you did not become involved in the political struggles of the people, you know. And this was a straitjacket upon Malcolm, and he ultimately had to break with this in order to begin to really forge the full dimensions of his perspective on the African-American movement. The same thing with Edwards. Even though Booker T. Washington was the one who formulated the Tuskegee program, there were certain aspects of this program that were deficient. Number one is that that Edwards was calling for a more rigorous academic program. Washington at Tuskegee was saying that it was industrial education that black people needed foremost. But Edwards, being a disciple of Washington, felt that there needed to be a dialectical union between academic and industrial education in order for industrialism to reach its full potential in the African-American movement. That was one advance that Edwards made. The other advance that he made was he began to call for, in the period from the 1890s up until his death even, he began to call for broad democracy for the African-American peasantry in the Black Belt South. And this was certainly a dangerous thing for Edwards to do, given the reign of terror that existed, that was visited upon black people, particularly in the Black Belt. This reign of terror was such that one historian has called it the nadir, you know, the low period in black history. But it was also a period of great economic advances for the African-American people, because this was a period, you know, that the peasantry had begun to acquire the vast amounts of land, and it was also the period when that was the consolidation of the African-American national bourgeoisie, that both of these developments, you know, which were instrumental in terms of forging a nation for the African-American people. So that both men had to break with their ideological fathers in order to push the movement for African-Americans forward. Both William James Edwards and Malcolm X were Afro-American nationalists and saw the question of land as key to the liberation of black people. There is a chapter in Fallen Prince entitled Black Belt Land Tenure. And I preface this chapter with a quote from Malcolm X, and I just like to read several paragraphs from this particular chapter. The chapter starts off: "Land is the basis of all independence. Land is the basis for freedom, justice, and equality." That's a direct quote from Malcolm X. Malcolm X is correct. Land is the basis of independence. In the history of the Afro-American movement, it is the Tuskegee program that forged land tenure for the Afro-American people. The Tuskegee program practically stands alone as a conscious program to accomplish the acquisition of land. No other section of the Afro-American population was putting this cry forward, and no one was organized to do so. What one commentator ascribed to mystical causation was, in effect, the result of well-thought-out plans to purchase idle lands for the purpose of providing the economic base necessary for the development of the race. Reconstruction provided none of the economic requirements for the newly freed bonds people. Further complicating the situation, the abolition of slavery split the dialectic of the bonds people's struggle into its economic and political components. Previously, the struggle for abolition encompassed the economic and political dimensions of their movement. With emancipation, new political and economic objectives arose. Politically, the contention for broader democracy developed, as did the thrust for economic livelihood. Economics and politics were no longer automatically joined as they had been under bondage. They now formed two distinct and separate parts of the expedition for liberation. In the economic sphere, land acquisition was judged the critical factor. Reconstruction did not fulfill the ex-bonds people's, now a peasantry, desire for land. They accomplished this task themselves, largely under the leadership of Booker T. Washington and the Tuskegee program. And then I go on to talk about some how much land they acquired. The value of land, the value of farm, Negro farms. This is from the Bureau of Census Information. The value of land in Negro farms increased from $324 million in 1900 to $324 billion and change in 1900 to $756 billion and change in 1910, the increase amounting to 133.2%. And this, and then I go on. These economic developments reflected the material advance of the Afro-American peasantry. Just as dramatic were the achievements in the area of small business among the growing class of black entrepreneurs. Washington's era should be known as the age of economic advance because the two main sectors of Afro-America, the national bourgeoisie and the peasantry, were on the move. It was the small section of the national intelligentsia, less than 10%, that chafed because of the absence of a platform that pushed for advanced democracy. So this gives an understanding of this whole thrust that was being made for the consolidation of this nation within a nation that Booker T. Washington talks about in a book called The Future of the American Negro, where he in fact uses that term. You know, so if you begin to look at this period, you begin to see the conscious movement on the part of the people to form this nation, you know, that others are looked at and can say, hey, here's a national movement, here's a nation in development. But here, consciously, you know, I think, and that's one of the achievements of Fallen Prince, that it talks about what was happening consciously among the people who were in the Black Belt to form what they call the nation within a nation. One of the other similarities is that both Edwards and Malcolm were victims of monopoly capital's attempt to circumscribe the advances of the Afro-American movement. And this conspiracy, in Malcolm's case, resulted in his death, his assassination in the Audubon Ballroom. The conspiracy against Edwards resulted in him losing the leadership of Snow Hill Institute because of this massive conspiracy, documented by letters that I was able to come across in the Tuskegee University archives that show letters between the Northern industrial philanthropist, Robert Russell Moton, who had become head of Tuskegee Institute, Fred R. Moore, who was at that time head of the editor of the New York Age, the Ku Klux Klan, and others. You know, I mean, these letters I found in the Tuskegee Institute archives, and I'm sure that I got to them before they were quote unquote sanitized. You know, and they formed the basis of probably one of the most exciting chapters in the book, Chapter 16, that detail the conspiracy to get Edwards out of Snow Hill Institute. I'd like to end the final, I think, similarity is that both of these men were referred to as princes, certainly in Ossie Davis's eulogy for Malcolm X. He referred to him as our black and shining prince. And coincidentally, when Edwards died in 1950, the man who one of the persons who was too ill to be there, but who knew intimately the work that Edwards had carried on, made a similar kind of reference to him. And I'd just like to read the last paragraph of Fallen Prince. North of Wallace Buttrick Hall is a small red clay crest which slopes and runs into a broad, glassy plain and into the old Turtleback Athletic Field. When the western sun lengthens the shadows, the bluff's silhouette stretches across to the green oval humpback. Edwards was buried atop this knoll, looking out over the campus of his beloved Snow Hill Institute. Inscribed upon his grave marker is the testament of his life, deeds, not words. His old friend, the AME elder, Reverend L.G. Duncan, who performed the marriage ceremony between William and Susie in 1900, was himself ill and could not attend the funeral. However, he sent a fitting tribute that began, "Know ye not that a prince and a great man is fallen this day in Israel?" So those are the kinds of similarities I think that existed between Malcolm and William James Edwards. And I think that the fact that these men were Afro-African American nationalists who are attempting to resolve the salvation of black people are internal to the continental United States. And the black belt, you know, I think that we need to really begin to see that this question has not been adequately addressed. You know, that the question of African-American nationalism and nationality, the African-American nation, is still on the agenda in American politics. Thank you.
Thank you.